And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl.
Let's
or
go.
Boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Live from PTI Worldwide headquarters in Chicago, it's Stocks and Jocks.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jim Lawler on the board. Struggle getting in this morning. The whole country's kind of weathered out here. We are, I don't understand, our lot's not plowed, the streets aren't plowed, nothing salted. It was a struggle getting back from Lodge yesterday and a struggle getting in, but we are here. We are persevering, Stocks and Jocks. What can I tell you? We're like the Seattle and New England. We persevered.
Yes, we did.
We have S&P futures down 4. We got the Nasdaq futures down 47. Big news, as you might have guessed. I mean, it might have if you thought about it, which our clients and our customers do, and our listeners. Natural gas up 90 cents, 6.17. That is a massive contract. That's a big number. Wow, 6.17. Oil's only up 4 cents, 61.11. It's up a little bit, but this natural gas. Again, as I explained a little on Friday, not going through the whole detail because I'm not the huge expert on it. But your natural gas is a year long sort of thing, where you drill. You know, I guess some places you do drill for natural gas, but mostly it comes out of oil wells, and it's a blow off in some areas, and some places they capture it. But there's all kinds of underground, a lot of them were salt mines, I believe, where they store natural gas in the summertime because you don't use it as much. Maybe in the dead of summer you do because electricity and air conditioning, but by and large in the fall and in the spring, it's the accumulation time of the year, and you fill these areas up. So you de-inventory during the winter in addition to the new stuff that comes online. So when you get a whole cold spell like this, you probably don't have enough in the ground, and your demand is much bigger, so it's a big deal. Anyway, Jim, we're talking about natural gas, as Jimmy's now in here, and Matt Burns on the board. Everybody's struggling to get in this morning, but we are here. What did you think of the games yesterday? if I could make a suggestion to these pro football coaches, of course they all know everything, so they don't want a suggestion from me. Throw the friggin' metrics out in the playoffs. The Bears lost because they didn't take a couple early field goals, and the guys yesterday lost, or I don't know, they didn't tie because they decided not to do a chip shot in horrible weather, and they don't have a quarterback. What is wrong with this picture?
Well, Chief, I mean, they tried a couple of field goals, but...
Later,
but the weather was really bad.
I'm saying, he did a chip shot early that he disdained.
That is true. I mean, I was listening. Bill Cowher was right. You know, the bottom line is, he who has most points at the end of the game wins.
Yep.
So, this is playoff football. You got to get your points. Get them where you can. Because you cannot, you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, I think that you get four downs. You didn't make the 10 yards in three, and you got, it's like the people who kick a field goal and then there's a penalty, take the points off the board. That's, you don't want to do that necessarily either. Boy, today, in other words, a big story today, in addition to natural gas, is gold for another $100. Silver is over $100, which is, who'd have thunk that? We are kicking huge ass in gold. Silver, we're kind of chasing some calls we sold a while ago. So we're not doing as well in silver. Plus, and this is a beauty, Jimmy, I put a spread on in silver. When the stock is 92, so I put a 95 spread on, thinking, God, it'll never go to 95, and here it is 100 in one day.
Yeah, you know, flight to safety.
We have one. When is this going? This is crazy here, though. And this is nuts. $100 on silver. But sure wouldn't want to be shorted.
Well, it's flight to safety. I think most people now are starting to realize the United States, we are not in great financial shape.
No.
And the rest of the world now knows it.
I don't understand why this whole thing with Europe, again, you know, some of the stuff, I'm never going to say that the Trump administration is all wrong on everything they do. A lot of stuff had to be a blowback against some of the ridiculous stuff the Democrats were doing. I mean, I don't know what the hell those guys were doing.
Well,
I don't know if they did either. But I don't understand why if you this whole idea and this, you know, maybe he knows his base, which he does. His base, you know, a lot of them are just haters. Not all, a lot of them are haters. And in order to move them forward, you can't just say, since 1945 we have borne more of the monetary and other policies of protecting the free world than more than our share. Now we can go into whether we wanted it to be to control the whole thing, which I think we did, and all those kinds of things. But the fact is, now that's sort of changed, and Russia's doing not just saber rattling; they're invading places. And for somebody to say, "Well, okay, we don't have a whole lot of dough anymore. Everybody's going to have to pony up and take their share," I don't necessarily think that is a wrong message. But then when you start lying about it, where they, if you ask most of the MAGA people, not that they're all idiots, they're not, they're going to tell you that NATO owes us. They don't owe us.
No, and I think very simply, Europe is being a little bit more smarter. I think with the previous administrations, you know, we were willing to work with them, and they are willing to outlook our massive debt. Now they're not. And now he's running into a problem because we do. We have a massive amount of debt, and if people don't buy our debt, we can't buy all our debt.
No.
And now we're going to start owing, we owe other countries, and one of them is China.
Well, interesting part is UK is now ahead of China.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Japanese are the...
Yeah, they're the number one.
They're number one, okay.
Well, let me find the... I have the thing up here on Friday and put it in favorites just for a...
Good morning, everybody.
There he is.
Yeah.
Why are you late? You didn't have to go through the snow like we did.
Yeah, well, what time did you guys start? Because I...
Like 10 minutes ago after slogging our way through the snow. The guy shoveled the parking lot with a
snow. Percentage of debt versus other European countries like Germany, Italy, France, and the UK?
Well, I'm gonna pull it up here right now. So we are with the... it's interesting. China used to be number one, and they are not anymore. We used to be number one. They are not. They have cut back. Let's see if this is it. There we go. As of 11/25, November of 2025, Japan $1.2 trillion, United Kingdom $888 billion, which is up since last year by $120 billion. China mainland went from 768 last year to 682. So UK has more than made up China's drop. Belgium gone from 361 to 481. Canada 372 to 472. So I'm curious. Canada has lent us $472 billion. The average Canadian spends 9,500 hours on American goods. The average American citizen spends 1,500 hours on Canadian goods. Where exactly are they screwing us?
Well, it even gets worse. What did he say? He said, you know, he seemed to completely forget that the Danes had lost people in Afghanistan fighting with us. He seemed to completely forget that Article 5.
You're giving him a break. You think when you say forget, you assume he once knew.
No, they were fighting behind us.
Yeah,
that's his thing. They were fighting behind us, even though they did lose people.
It's insulting. Carney, of course, decided to change his tune, as so did Australia, about coming after and saying, you know, up yours. We're not going to play this game with you anymore. And
what is the game? I don't know what the game is. How do you
play?
Well,
that's a good point. There is all he is. He's just a, you know, he. Okay. The whole negotiating strategy is to be a street bully, okay, until somebody calls you out, and then he caves.
You know, reminds me of who's the guy in who's the guy that wore a white suit in The Godfather? The guy that Don blasted. What was his name? The guy who everybody paid off and they thought he was in charge and then he really wasn't.
Don Finucci?
Yeah, Finucci.
Finucci.
He reminds me of Finucci a little bit. Hope nobody kills him. Obviously, I don't want to see that happen. He reminds me of Finucci. He walks around like a mob boss. But anyway, you know, it's a lot of it's style points, a lot of it, but it works with your group, I guess. But when you tear apart everything you have, then what do you have left? I mean, the type of stuff that is going on is people in this country are losing business because the Canadians now have a port, and I believe it's Vancouver, where they can export liquid natural gas. Well, they used to have to come through here, and now they just built they spent $100 billion on a rail extension where they can off some of their grain and lumber directly without having to come here first. I mean, this is not stuff you want to have happen. Your people here make money on this. I mean, for somebody who's supposed to be so business, I don't see the pro-business part. I mean,
he's got to keep his... first of all, I look at his approval ratings, and they're still 38%.
Well, he's going to have 30 no matter what. He could poop in the middle of the Senate tomorrow, and it would be still 30.
So, as long as his 30% are okay... That's what he has to take care of. Okay, everybody else is, you know, going, all right, enough of some of these excesses that we're seeing out here. No, where we actually have Americans dead on the street. But as long as his base is happy, he is okay. Because he has to keep them. He doesn't have any residual, you know, good support anywhere else.
I think the base is wild.
75% of Republicans think he's doing a good job.
I think, you know, there's something to be said on this, that sometimes it's not what he's doing, it's what they do. The person they voted for will never do a bad thing.
That's true.
So it comes down to an individual sort of thing. And we have somebody saying, okay, of course, our other guys are the point is, we've been propping NATO up, according to Mike Murphy, which is true. We've wanted to. And does anybody think that the stuff we've bought in the last 50, 60, 70 years, if it was all because of NATO? I mean, right now, we're talking about we need Greenland for this massive dome against Russia and China. So other people are we're going to spend an awful lot of money for something that, you know, maybe we need it, maybe we don't. I mean, I don't know. It's the constant feed of our military industrial establishment that Eisenhower talked about. I don't think we did it because, to bless our heart, Europe. I think we did it because we wanted to do it.
Oh, that's right. No, that's right.
Now, whether...
No, that was...
You know, whether Germany at some point... should be told, yeah, you guys better come up with about 8 or 9 divisions that are on your side. I don't have any problem with that. But, as you know, sometimes it's not what you do, it's the way you do it. I don't think anybody in Europe, if you sat them down in a room and said, look, you guys, we're not in the capability, nor do we want to essentially protect everybody forever. Here's what's going to have to happen. And, you know, and Mike, now, see, now, you know, and Mike Murphy, who tweeted in, when I say NATO does not owe us, they don't owe us a check. The idea is they're supposed to have a certain percentage of their GDP should be spent on defense. Yet it's been turned around into thinking that they somehow owe us a check. It comes down to sort of the same thing, but it's not really. one sounds a little more malicious than the other, doesn't it? Just saying.
Well, and you know, absolutely it does. The I mean, we gained a lot too from having our. I mean, come on, you know, we were the you know. Well, let's not forget one thing here. This whole, I think that our view is skewed a little bit due to what happened in 1990 to, you know, 5-10 years ago, you know, when we were the only superpower.
Yeah.
And that was that was an unusual case. I mean, it happened. It was there for 15-20 years, and. You know, so maybe 25, but you know, it wasn't that way. It's never been that way historically. So all we're doing is reverting to the mean, where you've got it's a multipolar world. But going back to your original point, Tom, no, NATO doesn't owe us anything. However, you know, the messaging about you know, we were always crying wolf about them spending more for their defense. They did nothing until, you know, the Russian bear woke back up and, you know, rediscovered their imperial ambitions and did the same thing they always do. And now all of a sudden, now they're going to increase their spending. So, you know, I think there is a real, and even after that, there were some leftists in Germany and some countries that said, no, we're not going to increase spending.
What?
So, yeah,
we thought Russia was dead here. We cut back. They weren't the only ones. Everything that is happening in terms of does everybody need to pony up their share going forward if Russia's going to continue to do this in China? Absolutely. I'm not against that at all. But, you know, sometimes it's not what you do, it's the way you do it. I think if you do something the world's worst way, you put yourself in a bad light at us. I mean, I don't. You think the Germans and the Brits don't realize that they now have a problem with Russia that they didn't think they had 10 years ago? I mean, they're not that dumb. I mean, there's a very conservative guy over. I was listening to him, and he's Trump's guy. He's the opposition leader or something, and he says,
"Where? What country?
In Britain."
Okay.
He goes,
Farange, that's what.
Yeah,
it is.
And he said, you know, I don't have a problem. And he goes, I'm actually, you know, he's very Trump-like, which, you know, in terms of beliefs. He said, but don't tell the Brits that they didn't do anything, that they never fought with you. He said, we lost in terms of casualties and in terms of people per capita. We did every bit as much as Afghanistan as you guys did. Don't tell us we didn't, because our people are dead.
You know, I mean, yeah, they did.
Yeah,
absolutely, they did.
And so, I mean, it's not like, you know, come on, don't. Is having to insult somebody to get their intention? Well, a lot of people don't go with that. I don't.
Well,
you know, I don't.
I mean, it's. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. You know, they're pissed off that Carney told Trump to go pound salt, or the U.S. Yeah. to go pound salt, as well he should have, and. You know, I think they will eventually buy F-35s because Trump will find a way to call Carney up and, you know, be nice to him. But if they don't, that's 75 less, and that will have a big ricochet effect. Because, you know, we depend on those, you know, because the F-35 is nothing but I guess all planes are now, but it's nothing but a flying network is all it is. That you can't see. And all of a sudden that does put a hole in our defensive posture in North America, but also it sends a big signal. You know what? You know, our F-35s are so expensive, but how expensive will they be if the production was cut in half when people stop buying them overseas? So wait till that one happens. Wait till they scramble for that one. We have an ambassador up in Canada who is the most insulting. The Danes tried to throw him out when he was the ambassador to Denmark during the first term. This man is the most insulting, you know, public figure I have ever seen. So it's almost likely
that's probably what he put on top of his resume when he got hired.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, Trump loves it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's almost, and this is why he didn't like him, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene when she said, you know, when she tried to play a more of a conciliatory, moderate image. So they thrive. I think that he actually thrives on it. I think he thrives on the chaos and the insulting.
Well, that's fine, but
what he does.
I'm not worried about him. I'm worried about us.
Well, and we're going to pay for it. We will. I will tell you.
Well, I hope we don't too much, but I think we're going to as well. The thing is, the connections here, I'll say one thing about the man is picked up on, I mean, the stuff we've talked about on the show, all the people on the show, I mean, left and right, we've had pretty much of a theme, not a theme, but I think we understood more than most. The most shows, I don't listen to many of them, but we understood more than most that there's been a serious, slight degradation of the American dream virtually every day for about 85-90% of the population. And really starting in around 2000, maybe even a little earlier than that, in terms of percentage of the pie, but clearly after 2007, where some people are absolutely rolling more dough than they ever knew they had, and other people are just gagging a little bit. So Trump zeroed in, and maybe people around him, I mean, he pretty good perception of people. He zeroed in on an awful lot of people were not doing as well. I mean, I would say every single year since 2008, for sure, 2000 maybe. If I were to go back and know some of the people on the show, hell's all over this, and we re-jury rig, we actually come out with a real CPI and a real GDP, I think we've been in either zero growth or a recession for really somewhere between 17 and 25 years for 80 to 85% of the population. In terms of their living, now some stuff's gotten better. I mean, you got cell phone. By and large, their life, and all you have to do is look at all these young people. And Jimmy and I, on our, we go out, and John, you're with us sometimes on a Friday night. We get all these young guys from the CBOE and OCC and stuff. And they're good guys, but you just listen to them. Their view of the future is so much different than ours was. They don't see themselves doing anywhere near as good as their parents. They don't see themselves ever owning a new car or a house. Most of them, and these are people with good jobs. I mean, they're working, you know, for real places with real degrees. Some of them have 2 degrees. I mean, Trump has zeroed in on that, but instead of just saying, "Let's fix it," he's got to start pointing fingers. Oh God, it's these immigrants. They're the ones that are stealing your money. Oh God, now it's the Europeans. They're stealing your money. If anybody thinks for a second that if Germany or UK and all the rest of the people in Europe had been ponying up 20% or 50% more a year on their end, that one of these big, that we wouldn't have built another nuclear carrier for $90 gazillion or something like that, or we wouldn't have had, you know, get rid of one aircraft program and come up with another one. If anybody thinks that wouldn't have happened, I think they're out of their mind. Because we're doing, that has all to do here with politics and with spending money here to the right people. It has nothing to do with if Germany would have come up tomorrow and said, "Don't worry, we're gonna cover Europe. We don't need to put any people over here." Do you think all of a sudden our defense would drop over here? So he's massively good at pointing fingers at other people, and yet I've had conversations with people and they talk about, "Oh, these migrants. Look at these people. Look at the advantage they're taking. They got all these jobs, and there have been jobs other people want." I said, you know, you do realize that most of these people have a Social Security card, and maybe it's the wrong number, and maybe they've been paying in to a number that doesn't even exist, and Musk and his Doge boys didn't come up with that problem with the Social Security. I was talking to a guy a couple of weeks ago, go nameless. He does accounting work for people, and one of the firms that he does work for, there's a guy that's worked there 25 years. He's not a citizen. He said he came over here in a green card or something. And he's been here as a house, does everything, the bank's accounts. He's been paying a Social Security number for 25 years. It's a fake number. Now the guy's retiring. He's not going to need Social Security. Not going to need Medicare. Who's screwing who, Jen? Jimmy?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, but, you know, this is where I go back on this whole immigration thing. This is why I really... see red with the previous, you know, with the loyal opposition here. You and I've talked about this on the Friday night every time we all meet. And how they let this get out of control. And I mean, I do remember the story. I think there was a when I was reading that book, Original Sin, which I had to stop and start several times because it was like watching a 747 crash. Biden made a comment in one of his speeches in the early part of his term about illegal immigrants, and the left special interest groups went berserk. And he said he had to change the phrase and say undocumented aliens. But talk about blowback.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, and of course we all live in the same city. Well, which has a
what you're saying is the Democrats gave us Trump. Sure they did.
Yeah, they did. You and I talk about it all the time. You know, the mayor of Chicago is a recruiting post for Donald Trump.
That's exactly right. Well, what? Here's the part, and I don't expect people. We have an advantage. The people on the show, Kevin and Carl and those guys, they're professors. They need to be up on stuff. They would be anyway because it's kind of ways where they are. We're up on this stuff. I won't say none of us have a real life because Hal certainly does with the triplets. But for most people, you can't keep up on this stuff. There's no way you can think it through, first of all, now, because I think everybody's hurting kind of financially, unless you're one of the 10%. When you look at what's happened in the world, you look at what we did in the Middle East, blowing up Iraq the second time, and look at what's happened in Syria, look what's happened in all those places. There are, last time I checked, and I don't check every day, there were like 6 or 7 million refugees places, and that doesn't even count a place like Venezuela where some guy gets a hold of a place, and I don't know how anybody lives there. Is there even any? John, you've been you still live feelers out. John lived in London for a while, Singapore for a while. He's our world royal guy.
Yeah.
Have you ever talked to anybody from Venezuela? How do you live all day in Venezuela? Is the money worth? How do you get on a bus?
The Venezuelan expat communities in Florida, and I may have mentioned this before, but I did see a good interview with. No, answer your question. No, all my connections are in Europe and really in Asia. And the, and there is an Asian philosophy that about politics that the emperor is very the sky is very high and the emperor is very far away. That's the old phrase they use in Chinese culture. That is, these jackasses come and go. Now, they're referring to emperors, of course, but those guys used to come and go.
You're talking about 100-year periods.
I think that, by the way, I think that is highly overdone. I can remember the BS when all these Japanese companies used to have their 100-year plans. That was bull. That is bull. And the Chinese, too. Now, they're... that is just a misconception because they have a closed system and they have state control. I can talk for a long time on that.
Hey, we also have Mr. Flanagan. And also, while you're talking, John, just so you know, we also have the Commerce Department took a 20% stake in Rare Earth or somebody today. So we got that going for us. What the hell is that all about?
So all of a sudden now we have state capitalism.
Yeah.
We have how much?
I'd love to find out who front ran that trade. It's up 20% this morning. John, were you in?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did you get in on that trade?
No. Haven't we always had state capitalism to some extent?
Not to this extent. We
did give all the land to the railroads, remember?
I'm talking about people buying stock in a company, the next day it's up 20%. I've never seen that.
Well, that's part's true, but I just had to throw that one in.
How much land did we give the railroads, Jen?
Well, John, millions.
Oh, no, we gave, they had all the right-of-way. They gave them the, in there. I think, what was the, was what, within a mile? The mineral rights were within several miles of each track.
Yeah.
It wasn't mineral rights. It was just, they didn't even know there were minerals in those days, but they gave the five Western railroads something like 25% of all the land in the U.S. That's kind of a lot.
That's a good thing they did, too, Tom.
Well, yeah. Well, for those that have no idea what the hell we're talking about, actually, I think the first... when was the first one that they did that to, did they do that for the Erie Canal?
There was government, you know, federal money in that. It was a state... I think it had state control, but it got... I don't know if it was government bonds. I've got a couple things about on the Erie Canal I've read on and off over the years.
What we're talking about, for those that have no idea where we wound it up, the I&M Canal, I know, was the same way, but the railroads, what they would do is, if they gave you a the right to build a railroad, they would give you a certain amount of land on each side of the line. They did the same thing with the I&M Canal. The I&M Canal, for those that don't know their Chicago history much, was essentially what put Chicago on the map, because it connected the Lake Michigan watershed to the Mississippi watershed, where things could go back and forth between the two. So you could ship stuff from Detroit to New Orleans now. And
when did they build that canal?
I want to say it was done in 1865. That's the same year the Border Trade opened. Duh. Do you think it was connected?
It opened in 1848.
Well, was that the same? The Border Trade opened the same year, I know. And it was shoveled by hand by mostly Irish people. But anyway, it connected the. Give me a minute here, guys, because it was Chicago has an unusual topography. You know, there actually was a Chicago portage. When the lake was a little higher, you actually could canoe from the lake to a tributary in the Des Plaines River. And go right, but as the lake sunk a little bit, there was no portage. So
didn't know that.
So Chicago is an unusual spot that if you go, actually, to Harlem Avenue is about the spot, which is maybe 7,200. So that's 6 miles in, right, John?
Yeah.
The Lake Michigan watershed is very, very, very narrow. You know, it's only within like eight miles of the shoreline, where all those rivers, the Chicago River, pours into Lake Michigan. If you go out just a little bit in the summit, and hence the name Summit, the city, that's where kind of the summit is, and you can step across the summit. Matter of fact, you can't even see the summit. There's a demarcation there between the Des Plaines watershed, Chicago River, and the Des Plaines River goes all the way down to the Mississippi to New Orleans. So the idea is, if you connect those two, that would be the trading place of the U.S., which essentially Chicago became. And when the railroads came on top of it, you couldn't just go north. You had to come through Chicago, right? So that doubled it. So the when they went to build the I&M Canal, there's nobody here but a few people, and there's some people starting to grow here, but still some Indian property. They gave the people to build the canal every other square mile of the city to sell. Now, there was nobody here to sell it to. That's a problem. But they were that's how they were supposed to get the money from... to build a canal. So that's why you see Chicago is on a grid system, except for the angle streets in Chicago are the old Indian portages, the old Indian waterway. I mean, Archer Avenue, Elston Avenue, those things are the Indian trails, essentially. The rest of the city, which is all in squares, was squared off to give every other square mile to the I&M Canal. John, I bet you knew that.
Well, and the land that the canal actually ended up occupying was granted. It was reserved from the land on either side of it. So it's two lines that run parallel to each other, pretty much. Rogers Avenue up in Rogers Park is one of the boundaries. That's the northern boundary. And they were then, like, that land was ready for development. The stuff on either side of it had not even been subdivided. It hadn't been, you know, surveyed.
Yeah, none of it had. That's why it became, you get this square mile on. The city get the other square mile, right?
Well, and they were, you know, expecting land sales of that to help finance the canal. But, you know, these things ended up being surveyed at different times, so the stuff on the other side of the canal lines came later, and it doesn't jibe with the boundaries inside the canal boundaries, and you can still see this at crazy intersections around Chicago, where you can tell that the surveyors couldn't fix what had been broken for a couple of years, so they just kind of patched it together the best they could. But it was, you know, it was a huge tract of land given the size of the canal, and they weren't sure exactly where it would go. It was like the Panama Canal. They wanted the rights to do it. But, you know,
you and I could have figured out where it was going to go. It was going to go from the South Branch of Chicago River to the Des Plaines. Duh, where else is it going to go?
Right, but I mean, it's a lot of land on the other side of the actual canal that was held back. So they gave themselves a lot of freedom about exactly where to put it. They knew generally where it had to go, but, you know, that didn't restrict them. The railroads were a little more restricted when it came to land on, you know, either side of.
Well, it depends. When you went out west, they got all kinds of it because nobody wanted it, right? You weren't going to give. You weren't going to give. I think they gave the Burlington 20 miles on each side.
Yeah, and in some places more.
Yeah, you weren't going to do that in New York,
right? But, you know, that kind of capitalism, you know, built the country. You know, settled it. It enabled, you know, movements of people. It attracted people from everywhere.
Well, the reason why we built the Transcontinental Railroad is because Lincoln didn't want, during the Civil War, he didn't want California separating off and becoming another country. So he had to connect it. But here's the reason why you guys always want to be captain instead of one of the schlumps. During the rainy season, between the Chicago River kind of swamp near Summit and the Des Plaines River, there was this thing called Mud Lake, which is nothing more than kind of a swamp that we got to be, what, a couple feet deep, John?
Yeah.
So if you had kind of a barge of the time, a wooden barge, you could actually get it through this Mud Lake if you kind of pushed it. So what they did is, if that was your boat, the schmucks, not the captain, would have to get out. They'd have, you know, these big outfits. They'd get in the mud, they'd slug along, and they'd push the boat through to the Des Plaines River on the other side. Meanwhile, the captain was in the bar. So the captain got to go to the saloon while his schmucks pushed the barge through the mud. Now, you'd rather be the captain, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I still think I am a captain.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know. I'm not so sure I'd be one of the guys shoving, but the I&M Canal, when Father Marquette got here, and he was with Louis...
Joliet.
Yeah, and they must have came here in high rain season, and they thought a canal would be from Chicago River to the Des Plaines River would be like 3 miles. They were glowing. The other potential route was up the St. Joe River to the Kankakee River. And they just, whoever the theys were, decided on the Chicago route. It turns out the canal is like, what, 60 miles long, John, to get from. But they didn't have locks in those days. So to get from a spot where it was deep enough to have any kind of a barge to a spot in the Illinois River where it was deep enough, we had to go, it's all the way to what, Marseille or someplace?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a ways down. And it went through, you imagine digging by hand a canal through a swamp? The amount of typhoid, the amount of deaths these poor Irish guys got digging this canal were, which was pretty brutal. Wasn't as bad as doing the railroad, but it was bad. You know, life was not fun for anybody in the 1800s. Unless, even if you were in New York, you had a big-time family, the disease and stuff. Yet if you had a bad case of the flu, two or three of your family members died. Pneumonia, that kind of stuff. Your teeth all fell out. Ugh. Who the hell wanted to live in the 1800s? Just saying.
Better than living in the 1700s.
I suppose. But so Jim,
you look back fondly. Or
you know, there was I heard someone say that the actual biggest advancement in medicine was soap, wiping your hands. I heard that once. That was soap. Soap was the biggest advancement in medicine.
Well, yeah. Well, not to mention, if you operated on somebody, the idea that you try and get the germs out of the room.
Yeah.
It took them a long time to figure that out.
But so what? We've got all this. Well, we talked a little bit about the politics earlier, but it's we've got this carnage on the world stage, and I every time I see two issues. One is the carnage, But second is every person I you know, I talk to that isn't really on the show, and even the people we, you know, argue with on the show are knowledgeable, so you learn from them. If you say stuff to people like, you'll be in a, you know, in a, downstairs in the bar, and somebody will say, "Yeah, these Europeans have been screwing us." I said, "By the way, do you know that we owe the UK $900 billion?" "Oh, that can't be right." "Yeah, it is." I mean, the entirety of what's going on, both Jens and Jimmy, it's really hard. We pick up a different piece of it every day doing the show, and we're doing this on purpose. I think the entirety of what's going on has to be totally lost on, you know, the average person. And whatever side you believe, you just believe. When either side is lobbing lies at you, "Oh man, look what these guys are doing on dairy. They're screwing us." "Yeah, but we're doing the same thing with sugar." "Oh yeah, well, forget about that." That type of thing. I mean, it's look what the Chinese are doing with us, or the Japanese with rice. "We're doing the same thing with this. We're doing the same thing with that." Everybody's doing the same.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the entirety. Nobody has the time, I don't think, Mr. Flanagan, to dig behind whichever story either side gives you and actually read up on it. Or, you know, with the stuff going on with, you know, people being shot and stuff, how many people have actually watched the tapes? How many people just listen to their side, figure out what their side says, and that's what they believe? It. We got to get away from that somehow. How do we do that?
Well, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but there is a lot of people that are vested into having this kind of chaos.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they busted about four far right podcasters, Tim Pool being the most notable, for taking money from Russia. And these guys say, "Well, we didn't know it was Russia. It was a, you know, it was a company." I mean, you're talking $500,000.
Wait a minute, how did we get that for Stacks and Jacks?
How do we get that? Well, tell you what, I think we should just put the flare up in the air. We're available.
Why doesn't Mr.
We're available. Yeah.
Jim Lawler, he's Mr. Bill guy, send him a bill. See if they pay it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, my point is I do think, you know, okay, those are international actors. I mean, that's, you know, Russia's easy because they're kind of ham-handed. The Chinese are much better at it. This is one of the issues that, by the way, that I read that the American intelligence and defense community was not happy with Canada because they did let a lot of influence come through in several of their elections in Canada. But, you know, then domestically, there's people that profit on chaos, and they profit on the, you know, the fact that people don't trust each other now. The analogy I have is, you know, when you see these terrorist attacks in Southeast Asia, which I do follow, like, very closely, you never know who really is behind it. You never know if it's a false flag. You know, they kill, you know, five or six policemen in southern Thailand. You don't know if it's the Muslims that came up from Malaysia, or it's the indigenous Muslims, or it's the Thai nationalists. I mean, so we never know who's going to really profit. I mean, we can guess. But so this is the thing that I've started to really believe. There are so many actors. If we go to the Middle East, well, then it's logarithmic. You know, you never know who's behind this stuff. I was going to say shit, sorry.
You can do that as podcast.
Yeah, but no, and I think it's here. I think that we have that domestically. I don't know what you guys think, but people are paid and they're incentivized. Look at this nut job that used to be the assistant director at the FBI, who just admitted that, yeah, no, he was, you know, I was paid to say these things, these conspiracy theories. But what is his name? I was going to say Bongiorno, but that's our mutual friend.
Bonvino, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God. Anyways, that's my rant.
Well, I mean, I don't know where at all nobody seems to be able to tell the truth anywhere on either side, and I don't get that. And some guys are just locked in. Mr. Flanagan, I could use you. I was sitting there in Tripoli last week. I wandered in. Of course, none of my regular guys are there. So there's these two carpenter guys that I BS with once in a while, and they're kind of characters. One of them is a It's got to be an 80-year-old hippie, a biker construction worker hippie sort of dude. You'd love him. He's like, reminds me of you, even though you didn't have a motorcycle back when you were young. And so all of a sudden this guy comes in and he's, Jen, he's so conservative you wouldn't want to sit next to him. One of those kind of guys. He starts launching into me that Soros is paying for every one of these demonstrators. And I go, Soros, is he even still? I haven't heard that name in a while. What are you talking about? So, where does he fit into this? So guess what? The two construction guys get up and leave. They leave me sitting there with this guy. I'm going, that's just what. And the two guys were on last night, that they're going to be an interview, and they're demonstrating for what happened in Minnesota. One guy goes, by the way, I'm not getting paid by Soros or Antifa. We think Soros is still doing stuff. Is he still alive? Where is he?
God, he's got to be late 80s, early 90s almost.
His son that now runs it. I mean, he supposedly turned everything over to Alex.
Yeah. But I mean, his wealth is nothing compared to what Elon Musk.
No, yeah.
I mean, so Soros is a very wealthy guy. I mean, I'm sure 20, 30, 40 billion, but yeah. You know, he's way behind the rest of them.
This is a very, you know, clear paper trail when it came to, you know, the state's attorney's elections throughout, you know, the country that Soros, you know, gave freely and targeted people that, you know, he wanted. And that's how we got Kim Fox here and how they got, you know, Kasich Boudin in San Francisco and, you know, a couple other, you know, nefarious people. But I really think, you know...
Wait a minute, John. What do you mean by nefarious people?
Well, they're not working for the people who elected them. They're working for somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, you see that all over the place. That's a problem, by the way. Hey, John, bring that up. That's a full Monday discussion. Who the hell... Who owns these people? I'm talking both sides.
My point is, you know, nefarious. I think that's a very strong thing to say. They may not be representatives, but nefarious means they're doing something illegal and immoral. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not buying that all of them. That's too broad of a statement.
If we're going to do this, guys, which I have no problem with, by the way. I mean, I'm not opposed to a fight here on both sides. Mr. Flanagan and I have had some very, I believe, intelligent discussions, and let's start early on. Let's start from the beginning. Somebody's running for office, and somebody starts giving them like a lot of dough. I honestly believe, talking about going way back, that there's a couple of real problems with the Constitution, only because of what time has done. I don't think those guys, even though everybody can say they thought about everything, I don't think those guys had any idea that somebody in Vermont could really influence election in South Carolina when it took you 15 days to get there. So now, question: we've always talked, I asked, well, Mr. Lee, you're on the first time through this conversation, John Flanagan and I decide I'm going to have a party where I get 15 of you jamokes over $1,000 a pop. I get some good booze, and we get Jim Lawler, who's running for God knows what. So I write him out a check for 15 grand, and you guys ponied up a grand apiece. Now, what do you get? What do I get? What does he owe us? That's just regular schmucks. That's just regular, you know, coffee clashes, booze clashes type of thing. What if the number is 40 or 50? It seems like whenever we have a campaign law, somebody finds a way to get around it. You know, what if somebody go to the extreme? What if State Farm damn near pays for an entire appellate judge's campaign? You know, $1 million for a $150,000 or $200,000 a year job. And Mr. Flanagan and I, it's hard to put on the wall what exactly do you get. So if people like Soros are giving Kim Fox, which I believe he did, by the way, an awful lot of dough. How much is an awful lot? How much came from other people? What in her mind does she feel she needs, that she owes this guy?
Soros obviously didn't individually give her the money, or was it his PAC, or was it a...
Well, either way, it was a huge contributor. Yeah. It got there.
Okay, all right. Okay, but I mean, this is, you know, John, this is where I'm coming at. You know, I really... I'm very when we start painting any group with this nefarious, you know, with a phrase like that, you know, I'm really uncomfortable with that. And then, of course, we have the small issue of it's happening on both sides, aka Elon Musk in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, my issue is this, is targeting one group
when they're all
doing it. When they're all doing it.
Do they? I think, but again, I'm not talking for Soros. I think the issue with him is, and there's always some logic behind all these issues, not that I agree with them, is that, because I don't really want people that are hurting people wandering around outside of jail. I'm kind of with the right on that. Matter of fact, I could be more right than they are on that. But some people look at the U.S. and say we have a greater percentage of our people incarcerated than any other country in the world. Look at California, they're three and out and all those other kinds of things. Or three and you don't get out, more than three and out. And it doesn't... On an overall basis, it doesn't seem to be working. So just throwing people in jail, I can see somebody having a different point of view of that. Now, whether you want to elect somebody who doesn't put people in jail, I would not go that far. But clearly there's, and I think both of you guys would have to agree, there's room to review both sides of this argument, because both sides are a little weak, I think. What do you think, John Flanagan?
I think that, you know, there's a reason why we have people like, had people like Kim Fox here, and why we still have people like Tony Preckwinkle, who are such ideologues that, you know, Soros doesn't have to have, you know, or somebody like Soros doesn't have to have constant communication with these people to tell them what to do. They know what to do. That's why they're there. And they would believe this stuff, whether there was a Soros or anybody else or nobody like that. They would still be that driven, you know, to get their agenda across. So it's kind of an easy matchup, because these people are chosen because of their lack of respect for, you know, the law as most people in a big city would see it or envision it. And you have judges that work for Tony Preckwinkle pretty much. She handpicks the people who are going to run and get the party endorsement. And that's why you have this turnstile of people being arrested 60, 70 times for violent crimes. And then, you know, just, you know, stuff is dismissed out of hand. They put on home monitoring. You know, nobody pays attention to it. They take the bracelets off. Nobody knows if they're on or off. Nobody cares. This is exactly what people like Soros would want in a big city, and they've gotten.
Why would he want that?
Because the whole reason for a Soros and his open culture, whatever. I mean, the very name tells you that, you know, he has zero respect for a capitalistic system. That would, you know, disdain.
That's how he got his money. That's how he got his money.
But there's no consistency in these people, Tom, who are fighting to destroy the capitalist society.
Well,
they're doing it from positions of power, and, you know, don't ask them. Don't you see an inconsistency here? Because they won't know what you're talking about.
Well, this whole concept of crime and punishment, and every time especially in a place like Chicago, and boy, nobody's more critical of it than me. But the things that don't compute, and the people that have argument, all these people should be in jail. Yeah, but, you know, it does take like a year and a half for somebody to go to trial. And maybe, I know people that get off, their people are found not guilty. Maybe they actually did it. Maybe it was bad police work, whatever it was. People are getting off, you know, 60, 70% of the time. So spending a year and a half in jail only to be found innocent, that's kind of a high price to pay.
Well, they're not even spending time in jail, Tom.
Yeah, they are.
Well, not in this.
More so now, since there's no cash bail. And by the way, the home monitoring network is pretty effective. You'll see some bad apples, you know, get out, but it's pretty effective.
Well, not in these latest high profile cases, though.
Well, whatever side you want, you can always
show
try
up.
And accept.
Their solution was to send a postcard telling them to come in. I don't think that's appropriate.
Well, I think it's more than
that. Anyway, just to put this back in the bigger picture, though, what's happening in Minneapolis? You know, because this is gobbling up all the oxygen in the room lately. It is part and parcel of a similar kind of funding operation, but it doesn't require a Soros to do it. They've got a fraud operation running there, where, like in any fraud system, where you're trying to steal money that's been, you know, designated for certain purposes, and your whole purpose is to subvert that, you're going to have some money allocated for hiding that, you know, thwarting it, you know, investigations, getting rid of the people who oppose it. And I think what's come out in the last day or so, with the sophistication of what's happening with the anti-ICE demonstrators in Minneapolis, they've got their hooks into government databases up the wazoo. They can breach the, you know, the license plate ID system. All they have to do is contact one of their people who are out on the street looking for an ICE person to harass, and they see a car, they can phone in the license plate number. Their, you know, handler immediately texts back, yes, it's an ICE vehicle, you know, report your location, we're sending reinforcements. This goes, they got it like, you know, police radio stuff.
Well,
the only way you could really fund that, I think, without anybody knowing about it, is through the very fraudulent
activities. We're being directed by people, I won't say it, but they're telling people where the problems are, and they're always some minority, some Democrat. It's always some. They're telling people how much these people are screwing you, yet nobody turns. What if we were to turn around and put the equivalent of an ICE in Washington? We could find more larceny there than we ever could in Minnesota. What about the Trump family? How much do you think the Trump family has earned in the last 9 months?
Let's keep talking about Minneapolis.
Okay, but Minneapolis, Trump doesn't like Somalis. You put a bunch of goons. These people, this has nothing to do with the people getting shot in Minneapolis. They sent ICE up to, I was watching this the other day, sent ICE up into Maine. I didn't know Maine even had any immigrants up there. They don't like anybody. So some guy who is, he's from somewhere. I think he's either Hispanic or African-American. He's driving along. He is I-9 or whatever the hell that is. So he's here for another however many years while he's working to get his citizenship. He's being interviewed, and he's about to be hired by the sheriff's department. We saw this. So all of a sudden, like five or seven... All of a sudden, five or seven ICE guys stop the dude driving, pull him out of his car, and he starts talking about, hey, I'm here illegally. I'm interviewing for the corrections officers, blah, 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 blah. They don't care. Slam him down on the ground, do all this crap, and they take him away. And the sheriff comes on, who's going to be essentially the guy's boss. And if ever there was had a guy who was a Trumper, had to be this guy. There's no way this guy voted Democratic. And the dude goes, you know, these guys are untrained. They're uncivil. He said, we've apprehended some of the roughest people we've ever could come across on the highways. We've never had more than three people. These guys, I think it was five, it might have been seven. He goes, all they did was harass the guy, jam him, throw him down on the ground. Then when they throw him in the back of the car, they didn't care what he said. They didn't say, when the guy said he was this particular thing and he was interviewing, they never checked his stuff. They just threw him in the car because he wasn't white. He goes, and oh, by the way, they left his car right there with the doors open with all his personal belongings inside. They didn't lock it. They didn't pull it over to the side. They didn't call a tow truck. They didn't pull to a safe place and hand him the keys. They didn't do any of that stuff. He goes, these people are absolutely untrained. They're immoral, and they don't give a crap. And this is the sheriff talking. Nobody died. It's not going to be anywhere near. He goes, they got no business doing what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing.
The guy up in Minneapolis, the kid that got arrested outside of Target, they threw him to the ground. He's bleeding. And then they dropped him off at the Walmart five blocks away. You know, and he's sitting there. I mean, you know, it was heartbreaking to watch. I mean, these people are completely untrained, and the leadership is pathetic. I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree with that. They have a third of the trained of a normal police officer.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, I don't have a problem with anybody. Even the simple stuff here in Chicago, there was 640 people detained in the Broadview thing, and 16 of them had criminal records. We had a warrant.
Yeah, but
and they said all
included. Yeah, the criminal records included the traffic violation.
Yeah, I tell you what, if anybody ever put the three of us in the Oval Office, I'm way more law and order than these other guys are. I just want to do it right.
Well, then why, Tom, if this is the case with, you know, the quality of training, would the Minneapolis police not, you know, fill the void?
What do you mean?
What void?
Well, I mean, why do you have ICE doing traffic control solely because the Minneapolis police are not cooperating? They're under orders not to cooperate.
Well, why are ICE doing? First of all, why are ICE doing traffic control? Mm. I mean, come on. I mean, I don't understand that. It's
well, they're trying to free up streets that have been blocked by demonstrators, which the Minneapolis police have jurisdiction.
Well, I think John, when you. I'm going to say that we've talked about it on the show a lot, and we've talked about it in person. For some reason, the amount of larceny in this country, and I don't know where this all happened, has gotten to extreme levels in politics. When we talk about the amount of money in politics, we talk about how many people make money in there, and maybe they shouldn't. We talk about how many. Do you think for a second? Now, my ears immediately perked up when I look at this. Commerce Department investment in this rare earth place this morning. If I'm head of the SEC, I immediately look at every trade there in the last week. Immediately. If there's any sort of increase in trade and volume on options or stock last Friday, I'm assuming they have options, maybe they don't, last Thursday, Friday. Do you think for a second that our SEC is doing that right now because of who they think they might find? It's a question of which larceny are you going after? I mean, this guy's mantra is all these people that aren't white, that don't look like you, they are the problem. And I think some of them might be the problem.
To be non-white, Tom, but to say, therefore, you can't target the Somalis because they're black is bullshit.
I'm just saying, who would even thought, I mean, you're in my daily life. We go around, we do our stuff, shoveling snow. Do we think for a second that the reason why we're not doing as well in the world as maybe we would, our fingers would point toward City Hall, maybe the state, although I think the state's a little cleaner, and surely Washington. Do you think for a second either one of us would think that the reason why we're getting screwed is this group of Somalis in Minnesota? They're in Minnesota. Minnesota doesn't care about them. Why should I care about them?
They're cover for what Minnesota wants to do.
To do what?
Fleece the federal deal.
Oh God!
Programs. The American
I'm going to say that we can name individual people that have fleeced the. How much is? I won't say fleece because it was legal. How much of the Somalis made versus Elon Musk in the last year, out of federal funds? I mean, we're talking about it. We're letting people tell us who our enemies are. How many people are going to rant, especially if you're from the right, are going to rant about, you know, Trump's latest deal when they're convinced that the reason why they're getting screwed are the Somalis, who they never even knew existed until 2 weeks ago. I'll say it. How many people in Germany knew that the Jewish dentist down the block was actually their enemy and screwing them? Until somebody told them he was. I mean, out of all the problems we have in this country, I didn't even know they had Somalis in Minnesota, to be honest with you.
No, but we got a lot of them, Tom, and, you know, why do you think we do?
Okay, how many? When a dude from Washington Post wrote the article about the Horseshoe of Despair, how many people didn't go flying down to that Mississippi county that has a zillion people on long-term disability and say they're screwing us? Why not? I bet there's people down there that are screwing the system.
Tom, there's been a pattern of this kind of targeting of Minneapolis specifically, you know, the Twin Cities area. For a while, you go back 50 years when, you know, everything was up for grabs in the, you know, ending of the U.S. involvement in Vietnam, and there all of a sudden, you know, it was decided, you know, the Minnesotans didn't decide this, but it was decided to bring in, you know, refugee Hmong community members from Southeast Asia. You know, the Hmong were, you know, an ethnic minority; they were not, you know, a political force at all. But they came, you know, in the thousands between, like, 1975 and 1977. And I remember being in Minneapolis in 1978 with Joe. You remember Joe Lepley, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I went to visit him.
He's not around anymore, is he?
No, he passed away.
That's a shame. Nice guy.
But he was living in Winona.
He wasn't the guy who played lacrosse, was he?
His brother. He played lacrosse, too, but Jim Lepley, his older brother.
That's back when that was some wacko Eastern game.
Yeah. But, you know, when he was living in Winona, I went up to visit him like 4th of July weekend in 1977 or 78. And we went into Minneapolis, you know, and, you know, hung out with these people who he had met, you know, in Winona and lived in, you know, they're back and forth all the time. That was a really great weekend. But Joe and all the other people that I was, you know, with that weekend talked about, gee, we got real problems here with the Hmong community. And you're driving around Minneapolis, and I kind of knew my way around it. I've been there several times.
Worse than the Irish?
Oh, I mean, not in any way like the Irish, but the Irish, you know, who were in St. Paul, they didn't go to Minneapolis, but they wanted to assimilate. They wanted to be successful. They wanted to be upstanding citizens.
Remember to post their Nina, no Irish need apply.
Yeah. But the Hmong were a real presence then, and they had people really upset because they had taken over whole swaths of, you know, commercial districts and, you know, pretty much ran the show and were not nice to people who were already living there. And now that, you know, the Hmong community has expanded to, you know, what, over 100,000 people, but only in Minneapolis now. And, you know, who voted that? Well, the same people who voted Somalians to come in similar numbers. So why?
Well, I'll tell you why. Minnesota for a long period of time, we had a welfare system that gave money to anybody who needed it. So they had.
I mean, it wasn't a hospitable climate if you were from Somalia or if you were Hmong.
You think a lot of black people went up to Minnesota because of the weather?
I don't think so. But they certainly stayed away because of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like. I mean, I, these things are all.
All I'm saying, Tom, is that these targetings. And the same thing in Lewiston, Maine, with Somalis and Venezuelans, you know, the people in the last two or three years that was, you know, shipped to certain places, you know, by Democrats, Republicans alike. All of this is totally by design. It does not, you know, involve the spin of a roulette wheel or anything else. It's been thought out a long time ago for a big reason. It's to take advantage of the soft, progressive, generous cities, and Tim Walz calls them a generous society, and they sure are. But it's to take advantage of people who you know, are a little sleepier maybe than they should be.
Well,
and they paid a huge price for it too. Otherwise, you know, they didn't do it in other places. They could have done it, but they did it in these two cities, high profile cases. And I gotta believe it's for geopolitical purposes to soften up, you know, cities one at a time. You change the culture, make people
I don't think anybody
politics and violence.
If these guys were that smart, they wouldn't have run Kamala Harris.
Well, it doesn't take brains to run Kamala Harris. It takes something else.
I'm saying, I don't know all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. I'll be honest, I don't know. One thing I do know.
But don't confuse this with stupidity, Tom.
I don't.
Or cluelessness. It's not that.
I'm not so sure that our people are that smart, but where I'm going with this, Jan, is that we're running into a situation where we have a lot of, I'm going to say, really, really dopey Americans that see our foreign policy stuff, not just us, but other people, and we blow up all these places in the world, basically. And what is the per capita migrant population in Jordan, for God's sake? It's like half the people are migrants, right?
Huge.
I mean, it's unbelievable. But we have Americans here, and I'm not putting you in this category. We go around the world and blow all this stuff up, and I'm not blaming us or Venezuela. You know, there's 6 million people without a home. Well, how many do we want here? Well, nobody. Okay. How'd you get here? Well, I came from the Irish potato famine. Well, what if that was a policy back then? You'd still be sucking on a bad potato. I mean, I don't want everybody here. You know that. But somehow along the way, the idea that we don't want any of this stuff. I mean,
no, but why would we want to concentrate them in a single metropolitan area as we did?
Why do the Irish people all go to Bridgeport? But they do it on their own.
But every other city in the country too, Tom. Were Irish.
Well, here they came and worked on the
and they weren't told to go to Chicago.
Well, they went to Chicago because
the Somalis
and
the
because you got a crap
you got Minneapolis. They didn't pick that out of a list.
You got a crap job at the stockyards. And by the way, you dug a canal, and then you built a railroad across the country. They're all horse bleep jobs. But I guess, I mean, I, when I was Unfortunately, let me try and set this in economic tone.
They went for the jobs, Tom, clearly. But people who came to Minneapolis didn't go there for the jobs.
Where we are right now, I think, and I'd like your guys, you know, without one side or the other, where we are right now, you have two camps on the political side, and both of them, I think, suck. On the one hand, the people who have all this money think for a second they earned it. I mean, you know, your stock went from 50 to 500. I get, yeah, you earned it. I mean, you've invested. I'm not saying that because that's what I do for a living. So I'm not about to say that my clients don't deserve the money we made in gold in the last 3 months or other stuff. I mean, yeah, they do. But the point is, there's people who essentially were born on third and thought they hit a triple, right? Elon Musk. You know, would they have ever made a dime if they didn't get all this money from people buying regular cars? But so let's say that. Then you have a part of the economy that isn't doing so hot. There's no way they can make ends meet. Social Security, what was your increase last year? $20 or something? Some ridiculous number, $30? And which, you know, because there is no inflation. There's people all across the board that they're essentially hurting. And there's some groups, the Mayor Johnson group is, we're always going to have people always hurting, so it's our job to funnel money to them, somehow keep this as a permanent underclass, pay the people in the middle, which are my guys, and we're going to just do that, which I think is a horrendous way to do things. Instead of doing whatever you can to get the schools open at night, teach people trades, get them a job, that's where I would be going. Then you got the upper group that somehow feels we're better than the rest of those people. Screw them, because we made our money the old-fashioned way, even if they did or they didn't, or maybe they even inherited it and still think they're better than everybody else. I mean, and they don't want to fund any of this stuff. But to me, the problem has to be addressed, and I don't see either side addressing it. That's where I come from. And I don't really give a crap if the guy who fixes things is from the right or the left. I just want a guy who's going to fix something.
Well, fixing them is going to be a very unpretty process, Tom, because it is really broken now.
Whatever, every day, what you just said, every day gets more and more true, I believe. Every single day, what you just said gets more and more true. How hard it's going to be to fix it.
That was by design, too, Tom.
You
overwhelm the country with, you know, 20 million undocumented people, and you don't care who they are, where they came from, or what they can do. You just bring them in.
They have, in terms of the big money picture, they're a pimple on the ass of an elephant.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. This whole idea that
what it's done to the city budgets, just in Chicago, is, you know, disgusting.
No, it isn't. The numbers are, I wouldn't trust those numbers. I saw all these people. I say, oh, there was a big camp right near my house. I went by there two times a day. I never smelled any marijuana smoke like I smelled everywhere else in the city. I never saw these guys drinking. Within a few months, I see half of them going down to the bus in the morning. They must have got a job somewhere. And we're talking about 50,000 people in an area with 6.5 million people. And the numbers are millions and millions and $500 million. What's $500 million divided by 50,000? Like $2 million a piece or something?
How do you think Chicago would run a program like that, Tom? It wouldn't be because they want to save money. They want to throw money away.
Oh, sure they do.
So, well, you can say, well, here's the number of people we have to deal with.
Okay,
couldn't have spent that much money in Chicago. Of course they could.
I must have said 15 times in the last 2 weeks. The Democrats give the money to their people, and Republicans give the money to their people. And right now, the larceny and a lot of it in Washington is coming right out of the White House and the people around him. I mean, and everybody who's involved. It's big company larceny, big government larceny in Washington, and it's small people larceny in Chicago. It's larceny all across the board. That's why I'm agreeing with you. To straighten this out, I need the buses to put people in jail. I'm with Carl on that one. But, I mean, the numbers... Elon Musk can steal more than the entire city has, for God's sake. I mean, the numbers don't even come close.
Well, he's already got people here doing a pretty good job without him, so...
Well, I mean, I don't understand what's going on in these cities. I don't understand what's going on anywhere, to be honest with you, John. And I don't... But the larceny, the amount, the trillion dollars that we're losing like every day, or not every day, but every few months in this country has nothing to do with the Somalis. I'm sorry.
Well, but the net effect of all of this, Tom, is to demoralize the people who have kind of held the ship together for generations and are getting sick of it, and they're walking away from it.
Who are those people?
Like there's people like you and me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on the part where we're getting screwed.
But, you know, it's the bigger picture here, and I have trepidation of saying just how big the picture is, because it's a nightmare.
Well, the picture is we got to go to break.
It's to make people not care enough that they can get away with even more.
Well, I wonder at every step of the day, and we got to go to break here. I wonder why we actually have arguments about people going to college. Where to me, if college was 21 grand, everybody go to college, but it's 70. I don't understand how all this happened, John. I honestly don't. Every topic we discuss, no matter what, pick a topic, something's wrong. I mean, something's weird everywhere you look. Am I right or wrong? I mean, do you have young people never be able to afford a car, never be able to afford a house? What's wrong with that? Then you have absolute morons come out and say, what we need is, we had a couple of the guys in the administration and other people, we need to build more houses. We need to build low-price housing. There isn't a house out there that you could duplicate with today's prices at Home Depot for the price the house is going. Find me a guy who can build a house for 120 grand. Where's he getting the money? What's he building it with? Dirt? And the lack of knowledge of all these people pontificating. Anyway, S&P futures down 2, Nasdaq futures down 48. We come back, a quick break. We'll come back with Nancy. And the big news today is gold and natural gas. Yikes. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
There's something happening here. What it is.
Blowing up big stacks, Jackson, somehow. Ed Byrne on the board, Jimmy Lawler in the studio. We got John Lee with us. We got John Flanney with us. Now we have Nancy with us. S&P futures down 375. Nancy futures down 57. Big news. We'll go right to it. Is we've got gold is up a whole bunch. It was up $100. We'll see if it's still. My computer's going crazy here because I'm trying to find natural gas specs futures and how big that contract is. But it's big. For that be a dollar. And I mean we had people used to trade natural gas here back in the day and. Anyway, all right, come on, where's my gold number? There we go. Gold hits another high, gold surges back 5,100 hours as investors. Gold's up 87 bucks, was over 100, 5,066. Silver's up 820, 109.59, who'd have thought it? But here's the number to get a natural gas, and I don't know maybe Nancy or Jan. $5.96, up 68 cents. It's up 12%. It was up a lot more. Nancy, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
All right. We're squabbling as usual, but over good stuff.
Squabbling? It sounded a lot more than that.
Well, you know, but every time, you know, we introduce a fact or two and people learn from it, whatever side they happen to be on.
Just another Monday morning, Nancy.
Yeah, I agree. We just say,
well, your facts are wrong. That's all we do. Yeah.
What was the song? Just another manic.
Oh, you got wrong facts. I got the right facts.
I got the right facts. my guys are good guys. Your guys are idiots. So Nance, what's going on in your world? The mortgage and there aren't many mortgages with the snow coming down like this. But what's going on?
No one is out looking when it's this cold. Let me tell ya.
You guys. You and your group and Audrey's group have had two or three winters where it was business as usual. Now, in the last week or so, not so much, eh?
Not so much. That's the best way we can put it. We don't even have to argue about that, guys.
No.
We'll just all agree.
Where are prices? The mortgage rates dropped a hair, but the 10-year is not down very much. Matter of fact, it's not down at all. It is a question for you. Everybody always talks about the mortgage rates. Well, back in the day when I started, the big trader was the 30-year bond. And by the way, you got a 30-year mortgage. Duh. So it always was one kind of matched up with the other. One followed the other, not always matched up. And then we decided we didn't, after the Clinton era, we didn't need so much money. Well, it was a foolish thing, eh, Jans? So we actually didn't have a 30-year for a while. Then we started to go broke again. We brought the 30-year back. But the 10-year still has remained now the big trader, not the 30, even though the 30 does trade. But the last few weeks, Nance, we're starting to see they were almost maybe a tenth of a percent of point difference, a tenth or two apart. Now it's up to like 6. So we're starting to see that 30 years separate from the 10 as the yield curve steepens. At some point, is the mortgage industry going to look more at the 30 than the 10, I guess is my question.
I have absolutely no idea. I'm willing to hear your guys' opinion, but right now I'm just sitting back and waiting. I have absolutely no idea how this is going to go. They keep saying mortgage rates are dropping, and I don't see where they're dropping, so I don't even know how to address anymore the question of, you know, that's people are saying, we heard on the radio the average 30 years 5.99, and I'm like, it's really not.
Well, that's why you got to listen to your guys versus the other guys.
Well,
that's their story, and they're sticking to it, you know?
Yeah, they are, but I don't see it. I mean, the 10-year was up to 4.25. I mean, when it was at 4%, you know, hanging around 4.01, going up a little bit and down, the rate was like right around 6.5, and now it's 4.25. I still think the rate is right around 6.5. I don't know what to say, because everybody, you know, they say the national average is 5.99, and I kind of just want to say I don't believe it. I know the average mortgage right now is, with, you know, taxes, insurance, and all of that, is around, at least in Illinois, in our area, it's the average is around $3,300 all in.
That includes, Nancy, this is John Lee. That includes taxes. Are you putting that in there?
The taxes and insurance, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, to me, that's a lot of money.
I was just going to say, you know, a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, the average person, you know, I say would make right around $60,000 a year. For simple terms, that's $5,000 a month. That's a big number. You know,
it's an overwhelming number.
And that's a gross number. $5,000 is gross. Doesn't even mean what you're taking home net. So, I just don't see where I don't see where it's going in a great direction for people. Like, you know, everything in the economy is great. Everything's great. I don't see it. I just don't see it. I see the average person living paycheck to paycheck. I see the average person struggling to buy food. I see people, you know, just basically complaining all the time, unhappiness. When the I hate to say this, but when the Bears were winning, people had a better attitude. Life was more rosy here.
It's called a diversion.
Right. I mean, they were just happier. But underneath it all, the bottom line is the average guy, I'm just saying the average Joe, is barely making it. And I don't see where all this rhetoric is about. And then you throw in, you know, the riots and all that other stuff. People are just really frustrated and sick of the news and just all of it.
And the weather, so, weather doesn't help.
The weather doesn't help. The low inventory doesn't help. The fact that you have to be ready to pull the trigger in a, you know, how would you like to just go to an open house, right? Or, right, first day of the house is on the market, you get in, you look at it, and you're standing there saying to yourself, I have to make a decision right now because this house will be gone in 3 hours.
Oh, that's a little crazy.
That's what's happening.
Well, Mr. Flanagan, what do you say about all this?
And Nancy, doesn't this, I mean, the figure you give on what somebody's, you know, nut is going to be every month, all the other expenses rolled in, how can, you know, minuscule changes in the interest rates make a difference in the affordability of these places? It's going to take a, you know, collapse in interest rates to loosen things up, and even then it might not be enough. I just don't see interest rates making it, you know, affordable by
It doesn't, John. Here's the problem. Like, I had a like, person A was selling his house to person B, and they were related. Okay. So when I talked to person B, who is much younger, buying this house, I said, well, the good thing is we know what the taxes and insurance are, because they were both owners, were not seniors. Cook County's Cook County. So I said, this is what they're paying in taxes, and this is what they're paying insurance. So if you use the same insurance agent, right? Yep. This should work perfect, right? And she could just afford it at that level, right? The insurance went doubled. And I called the insurance agent and said, of course, now I did not get the owner of the agency. I just got, you know, a worker bee. And I said, wait. You already have this house insured. And she said, well, I can't really talk to you. And I said, wait, you have to understand. I really need for you to explain this to me. And she said, well, after I talked to the borrower, she wanted this and that, and, you know, all these addendums put on.
The borrower or the insurance agent?
I was talking to all three. They're saying okay. That the borrower wanted, she talked to the borrower, young kid, that, you know, about all these addendums and stuff like that, and she wanted them all. And I called her and I said, tell them to give you exactly what your uncle's got, okay? Exactly the same thing. And it came down a sum, but not to the exact same number.
What were the addendums?
That if you, like, let's say the house, let's say there was a bad storm, okay, and you got damage on one side of it, but right around the corner didn't get damaged. You know, I mean, let's say the east wall got damaged, but not the south wall or whatever. They only replace the east wall. They don't replace everything. So the variance of color and all that, that's not going to happen. So I called the uncle and said, this is what's going on. Could you please call your agent, since this is the same, you know, this is your niece. Let's see what you can do. And they got the numbers closer. But now there's a number, you know, to tell you the truth, I didn't figure it in any higher because I thought it was locked down. And they're saying if you're a new customer and you're coming in, these are the rates you're going to get. That's what it boiled down to.
Well, yeah, I think the one thing we can all agree on, if there is such a thing, is this conversation, when I was real young, but I still sort of remember part of it, when my parents bought a place in 1958 or wherever it was, and I was like really young, the thought of you as a family, you know, the young John Flanagan gets married, and Susie Flanagan to get together, and the world is their oyster, right? It's only going to get better. Now, you're going to get the mortgage, you're going to get the tax and all stuff. The thought of you not being able to maintain going forward is you're supposed to get a promotion every now and then, maybe get a raise, those kinds of things. Of you not being able to maintain insurance or tax increases over the life of that mortgage never even crossed anybody's mind. Now, it better be. Because I'm not so sure that the young family that bought the place where the city just got redone, where John lives, both Johns live, where I don't think, Nance, if you put a mortgage together for somebody 3 years ago and they get a $5,000 boost in their taxes, I don't think the two of them are making 20 grand more to where that's, you know, it's, they're not even going to think about it. I think they're really thinking. How do you anticipate the insurance and taxes going forward going up at 10% a year when people's average salary is going up at 2? I mean, it's going to get worse as years go by, not better.
You can't. I mean, I can only finance on what I have in front of me, and the way it is today, I can't worry about it. But it, you know, speaking of another goofy thing, got a call from somebody and they need to borrow money, blah blah blah. And then when I dig into this, the person's taxes went from, and I'm not kidding, it went from $10,900 to $16,800.
John Lee, you can confirm that, right?
Nancy, my taxes went from $775, maybe $8,000 to $12,005.
Same thing, like 50%.
What are you doing about that?
Well, appeal it, and try to get a pitchfork and put some local politician's head on top of them, the pitchfork. But, I mean, because that's what it's going to take here. And so these are the property taxes. And so I was thinking about that, and I said, wait a minute. This means it's $25,000 a year for property taxes. Which means I've got to charge somebody at least $2,000 a month for rent. Where does that one, I mean, talk about affordability.
What county are you in?
I'm in Cook. I'm in Edgewater, Chicago.
Okay,
Edgewater.
So you're in Chicago. So this is this home I'm speaking of was up by Loyola. So that's what, Rogers Park? Maybe?
Yeah, so close. It's close. Close by.
But so I mean, are you going to protest these taxes?
Yeah.
Yeah, what good is that going to do?
You can get it lowered by, you know, 10%, 15% or whatever. But how can people afford this?
They can't. That's why I'm getting these phone calls from that area, this area you're speaking of. What is Edgewater's area? Can you give me a hint here?
It's Broadway, between Broadway and Clark.
Okay.
It's just south of Loyola, the campus.
Okay, so this is the area that I've been getting the phone calls from.
Yeah, it's just south.
John Flanagan, where's the northern edge of this area?
Devon Avenue.
So everything north of Devon got the total screwage.
It's another township. That's Rogers Park. So it's
south of Devon. Yeah. So we're south of Devon, right where Lakeshore Drive ends. That's our area.
Okay.
Broadway Club, south of Devon. 50% increase. And once I was talking to Chief about this, so that means if you're a renter, and I'm holding on to the home just in case we want to get out of this, you know, McMansion, or no, not a McMansion up here in Crystal Lake, but, you know, the
big place,
the
nice place.
The 1.5 acre, you know, with 10 gardens. And, but I'm going, my God, how can the average person, we're lucky, we're retired, we're 70, we have money saved up. How can the average family support this? And I know,
plus,
if you're going
to private school on top of it.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, bring that in. We're trying to breathe now and figure this one out.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. So you're saying this is real.
It's real.
See, I don't think
a lot of calls from this area to try and figure this out, and I'm saying you have to protest these taxes. You have to find out what happened. Now you're confirming it did.
I'm disagreeing with everybody today. I'm not saying you shouldn't protest, Nance, but in a, I'll tell you how long ago this was. The Southtown Economist, which John Flanagan knows well, once a year they would actually cough up a huge paper with everybody's, every single person in the area, tax. They'd have your address in there and have your tax. So you could compare yours to the guy right next door, the guy next door. So, you know, we would sit, ours was always a little less because we didn't have a garage and our lot was 37 and a half feet. The guy next door was 40 foot and he had a garage. So his was always, I don't know what ours was, $800 and his was, you know, $850 or something like that. And it, you could compare, but if, so if it turns out that ours was more than his, we could appeal with a chance of winning. But if a whole area goes up 25%, other than yours maybe being a little more than it should be, what's the bitch? I mean, the whole area went up. How what's, I mean,
well, and so Maria Pappas talked about this. I mean, I think that you spoke about this once, Tom.
Yeah.
She said it's really easy. You know, when the core, when the loop, which is basically funded, you know, which was kind of the, you know, the economic engine, and, you know, they paid their real estate taxes and so forth. She goes, the money's got to come from somewhere. And then she made a comment too. If you guys don't like it, then go vote. Did you see that?
Yeah.
She goes, if you guys don't like it, go vote. And, well, you know, when the treasurer says that, you know, people,
it's throwing down and, the gauntlet.
Well, like, well, I said, I'm going to go to Home Depot, buy a pitchfork, and I'm going to be down there. Okay, I'll get arrested by ICE because they'll think I'm some sort of, because I'm half Mexican. I'm going to get arrested, you know, for being a terrorist. I want to put Brandon Johnson's fake head on my pitchfork.
Well, I mean,
there you go.
Okay, but you can't, as much as I don't like him or Trump, Trump's been there for 9 months. It's not all him. Brandon Johnson's been there. Now, if we, and one thing I think we, and Mr. Flanagan likes to argue with me, we'll say that what we talk about on the show, we all agree on, there isn't really a subject right now. Once you blow the pants off somebody, you know, you got to, okay, what kind of pants do I want to put back on? Would, if we were to go back through this whole mess now, do we really think that Northwestern, which is the probably the single biggest cash cow in this whole downtown area, there might be some company that's bigger, do you think they should pay no taxes? Like, define profit for me. It's not profit, but there's a lot of money there. How do you have people that are making millions of dollars in management of a place that can't afford to pay property taxes? I mean, State Street now is, how many colleges, how many buildings, John, you know this more than anybody, how many downtown buildings now don't pay any taxes?
They've all got their foot in loop real estate now for a reason.
It's wonderful to have them down here, but they don't pay anything. DePaul's charging how much for tuition? They can't pony up $50 for a tax. I mean, what are we talking about?
Well, Western, go ahead.
You know, the old Continental Bank building across from the Federal Reserve. That's owned by Northwestern.
It is. I did not know that.
I did not know that either.
What are they doing? 231 South LaSalle Street.
But what about, they don't, there's all kinds of people renting there. How do you not pay real estate taxes?
Well, that's because they're Northwestern. They don't have to. It's like Lily Tomlin. I'm with the telephone company. We don't have to.
That blows me away this morning. I can't believe that. It's a regular office building.
Yeah. Well, you know, all these places were, you know, in this game, and, you know, the DePaul Center, the old Goldblatt store, or the old Davis store, their old Rothschild store before that, it's always been a series of department stores, but DePaul owns it now, and the city of Chicago is their tenant. You know, they have the water department in there, so they're paying rent to DePaul, but DePaul isn't paying any taxes on the property.
Well, you and
that's investment property at that point.
You would think, Nance. That's what I'm saying. Well, if we decide we're going to fix anything, you got to take whatever the problem is. Like John and I were, the two Johns and I were kind of jousting about earlier. You got to take the problem and say, okay, wait a minute, guys, let's get a beer, let's sit down, let's go way back to how this all started, in just about every subject. Am I right? How do we get here from where? How do these people get here? How did this tax? Okay, we started with the idea that somebody's going to have a little church. Now, do we want to tax the church? No, we don't, because we want separation of church and state. What if the church has a professional football team? Well, duh. Mr. Flanagan, am I right or not? Well, what if the church decides to sponsor a professional football team?
It's part of the academic bloat system that we have this, because you know the institutions weren't satisfied with just educating people. They had to become tycoons in order to fund an ever greedier administrative block of people and, you know, grant money and everything else. So they, you know, cashed in on this, and you know, you got the School of the Art Institute with, you know, the dormitory on State Street and DePaul, and you know,
aren't there a bunch of shared dorms where you have the Art Institute and DePaul and so forth?
Don't they share the one down, it's on State Street. DePaul, Robert Morris was an investor in it, and they have like a conference center, and you know, Roosevelt University, you know, participates in it too. So it's like it's shared, you know, shared governance. I don't know if it's shared ownership or not, but yeah. And of course, this helps all these schools because they can attract to downtown Chicago, which is, you know, an easier place to maybe recruit people to than, you know, a place far, you know, in Evanston or farther out. So,
Jan and Nancy, did New York do the same thing? That whole NYU area in Columbia?
Oh, yeah, but NYU, don't get me started on NYU.
Well, they don't pay either, I guess, is my question.
Right. And and that's, you know, one of the densest, you know, and, you know, desirable, at some level, desirable to live in. But, you know, they control the entire political agenda of that neighborhood. And they just own huge amounts of real estate.
And that's really so. Nance, I know you and I have worked on these last few stuff, people that she's closed on, and why does everyone look like a prize fight now? Is it because everybody is right on the edge money? Seems like you guys are in the ring for, I mean, you always get it done. I mean, you guys are good at what you do, but boy, it sure seems like nothing's easy. And I'm just listening every once in a while just to you guys talking. I don't get my nose into it. Are you there, Nate?
The last deal we closed, I can't even. I've never been so frustrated. And that's a very hard emotion to keep dealing with when every day it keeps happening to you. I think that was just a complete language communication barrier. Just people distrusting. Feel, you know, when you ask someone, you know, where do you work, and they give you one answer, and then you find out that they really don't work there, they work for somebody else. Now, it is related, I get it was all explainable, but digging through this mess and peeling back that onion was just so frustrating, you just wanted to rip your hair out.
And Nancy, are you saying that people were lying on their applications, or they were not being truthful in the applications, or it just wasn't quite copacetic? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that the borrower couple, he worked where he said he worked. She did not work where she said she worked because she was a contracted employee. And then the contracted employee was dismissed. She got hired directly, never even realized. She did realize her employer changed, but she didn't think it was a big deal to say anything.
Well, she told you the building she worked in, not who she worked for, essentially.
No, she worked for, she worked in the same building. That's just it. She worked as a contract. She worked for a contract employee agency, kind of like, you know what I mean? And then the contractor was let go and they hired some people directly. Now, she said she didn't know there really was a She knew there was a change in the guard, but she didn't think it mattered because she's working in the same building. Okay? And like I said, her all that's irrelevant. Let me see your paycheck. And then she says, well, I hurt my arm and I'm on disability. Okay.
Well, that does sound like, yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we're processing based on disability. And I get a letter from the doctor saying, okay, she's going to be back to work before it closes. So then now it kind of becomes mute, right? She doesn't go back to work. And I said, well, now I need another letter. And she's like, I've given you everything I'm going to give you. And I'm like, whoa. I mean, it doesn't end here. And then I actually went to her house, got her grandson to interpret, and finally I said, this doesn't make any sense to me. I said, are you sure you're not on workman's comp? And she said, I'm on disability. And it winds, I said, I don't think so. I think you're on workman's comp. So it turns out she was on workman's comp, didn't know that she had changed employers, but she really did. You know, the more I kept digging, the more I found out, and we're supposed to close in 3 days.
I think Nan should have been a detective.
I'm like, this is just so impossible. So then they call me and said that I tell them I need part of it now is you have to verify that if they don't, when I get your income tax return, that if you owed money, that it was actually paid by you. And I have to see it come out of the checking account. And that's because so many people are, like, the statistics are like 30-some percent of the people send in their tax return and don't make the payment. Just, I owe them money, so what?
Well, it's not so what. They're actually pretty good at financing it.
And so, no, they just don't pay, Tom, and they don't do anything
about it. I know, but they
so
put you...
They don't pay taxes? They don't pay their
income taxes. So you have to make federal income taxes. So you have to make an arrangement with the IRS to get into a payment plan.
They're actually very good at that.
So she... they finally... I give them the numbers I'm looking for, and she just goes to the bank and pulls a January bank statement and says, well, here it is. Well, first of all, it was in Spanish, and I'm like, no, can't have that. She said, Chase doesn't give out English statements. Well, of course they do. So they say, well, come to the bank. We're here. You know, we're tired of this. I said, okay. And I said, but it's going to take me about 40 minutes to get there because it's in the inner city. So I get there in breakneck speed of like 25 minutes. They're gone. And why they're gone? They were tired of waiting.
Well, there you go.
So, I mean, there's just... so many things that have gone wrong that you're just so frustrated.
Yeah. Nancy, I've got a different question for you. I keep hearing that there is no quote-unquote inventory, or the inventory is down, or...
Yes.
You know, I know that's a broad thing to say here. Do you see that? I mean, why is it happening? Maybe I'm looking at myself, too, because, you know, we have two homes, and I don't want to get rid of the other one in case we want it down the road. But is that really a big factor in why people can't move it, you know, why there's not a lot more movement in the housing market?
No, I believe the biggest thing is if you've got an interest rate of like 3% and you're going to have to at least go to 6 or more, your payment's going to go up. And no one's leaving. And that's why there's no inventory, because no one's moving. They're just staying where they're at. They all felt like when Trump got in, these rates were going to fall back down to 3%, and then everybody could make their move. That now they see that that's not happening. And there's no realistic discussion about, and people get their information from the news, right? So there's such hatred on both sides that people keep, whatever side you're on, believing, you keep believing it. And there's no one standing up saying, look, guys, this is not going to happen. We have to move on with our lives the way it is. And, you know, do you want to stay where you're at, or do you want to move?
Well, the phenomenal thing on the economic side, and John and Mr. Flanagan and I talked about this a week ago. We go a little over today because we started late. John, remember we talked about the first time, this has to be 3-4 months ago, where I said, you know, never in the history of man have you had interest rates on mortgages go from 3% to 6%. And the price of the house continue to go up. Yet, right. I mean, that's the sort of the phenomenon. You would expect it to go the other way, and yet it hasn't.
Right.
Mainly because of the people are stuck in a spot. Maybe because the money supply keeps growing. Maybe because the inflation is really a lot higher than people, will tell you that it is. I mean, there's a few things that, you know, you look at. And you say, why do people think that they're in bad shape compared to the way they used to be? Well, that's one of them. I mean, look at your average I'll throw the debt clock up here if I can find it. Here we are, debt clock, real time. I mean, you don't have to, depending on whether you're on the right or the left, and either, you know, you guys are getting your information from two different people, duh. Not talking about you guys, about anybody, but the average median income, 2000, 31.6, now 51.6, which I think is a little high, actually. But I'm going to say the median new home, 2000, 161, now it's 414. All right, so the price of your income has gone up 60%, 65, and the price of the house has gone up 150%. Well, those two numbers by themselves tell you what the problem is, right? Same thing with new cars, 22 in 2000, 51 now. They're up 2.5 times, and your salary's up 60.
Look at John's example. I mean, he's saying his PX has doubled, right? So let's just say they went up $6,000, right? That's $500 a month. That might be the difference between, you know, the 3% and the 6%. But it's and then the house insurance went up, right? Yep. This girl at least had to pay $500 or $600 more than what her uncle was paying. So now you're way over what the percentage rate would be, right? And people are just like, I can't afford it. So that's what is causing the low inventory. It's not that homes aren't being built. They are. It's just that the cost of construction is so much more. Well, if you look at the replacement value on these insurance premiums, it's so much higher than even the house is worth.
Well, that's right. And your friend dragged me to the dog park couple of weeks ago, and of course it was on Christmas Day. This old guy's sitting there, so I started talking to him, and he's telling me about his daughter bought a place right up by you, Mr. Flanagan. She had a house or a can, wherever she did, but she's got a job downtown. He's proud of her, blah blah blah. She buys this house, and she's right on the edge, you know, just like you're talking about, Nance. And all of a sudden, she gets the $5,000 increase or $5,500. So it comes down to $400 a month. The guy goes, she doesn't have $400 a month. And she got a little bit of a raise, but not that much. Raises and keeping up with the taxes, and he says she's sort of skunked. Now what happens, I guess, is the question. I mean, she'll probably find a way to pay it somehow, but...
she's going to find a way to pay it, but that controls the inventory. All these increases is what's controlling the inventory, and I've never seen the kind of increases in all the years I've been doing this, and I've been doing it since 2000. So it's do you see where it's not really about the interest rate? People are waiting for the interest. It's not about the interest rate anymore, right, guys? It's about all the things that are made up part of the whole payment now. And it's a problem.
It's got to be, you know, the reason people are spooked about getting into real estate at all, you know, and are steering clear of it, because they know at some point they're going to be squeezed out and it'll be a financial catastrophe for them. So they just soon continue to rent and piece it together the best they can, and they just sort of bypass the idea that they're ever going to be a homeowner. This is just an awful prospect.
Well, yeah, because the rent's going to go up so fast, you better get a raise every 10
years.
Well,
it isn't like your problems are over just because you're not going to compete to buy a house. You're still going to have to compete with rents.
Okay, John, you just got this huge increase, right? Are you going to raise your rent?
I did raise it to a certain extent.
Not enough to cover it, I'm sure.
Of course not. No way. I would have to raise. Well, you know, if it's a $5,000 increase, so we can all do the math. You know, that's a $400 a month raise. You know, and you know it's disheartening. But yeah, and then.
And I know his tenant. She won't.
oh yeah. And so I'm running to my niece and. You know, she's an artist and in social media. Alyssa, I hope that you're listening here. So I'm not sure that she's going to have the funds to pay it either. But it's the way it goes.
If I were you, I'd get a washing machine down there where she got to put quarters in. That'll pay for it.
Can you imagine having a two flat? And you don't want to raise prices on either one, but you just got a $6,000 or $7,000 increase?
Yeah.
and the person who owns the place is struggling to begin with, and now it's not even self-supporting itself.
Yeah,
right. And that was the whole reason for buying it in the first place,
right?
Because, you know, it paid for itself, you know?
Right. And it's not.
I'm not so sure that's happening.
No.
And so now we have, I mean, there's more than one problem here. And so everybody keeps saying to me, "What's the rate? What's the rate? What's the difference at this point?"
Yeah. I agree, Nancy.
That's not the problem. I mean, the problem is bigger. I mean, when you have two homes, the same home, to go into two different people, and the insurance goes from like a grand to 1900, I mean, and then you got to settle with less endorsements, and it's six, 1600. That is not good.
Well, we got a dash here, game. Mr. Flanagan, I'll ask you the last question. How many times have we talked, argued, jousted about an issue, and then finally said, "That's not even the real issue. This other one's even bigger."
We've been talking around it the whole time.
We've been talking around it. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. There's always another layer to the onion. Start peeling.
Well, I mean, because to try and tie together, you know, what we see in the medical area, outrageously overpriced. So, you know, if Carl ever got it to happen where we focused on them instead of all these other areas, and this is where the real money is in this country.
Yep. I agree.
So if we could ever get somebody's insurance bill down $500 a month from the, like, $2,400, wherever it is now, that could help. Duh, right?
But then how many people make claims for roofs that, I mean, really needed new roofs anyways, and they got them done, and the insurance company paid out, you know, all these claims? They're going to make it up somewhere, and now you're just shoving it onto other people who really had nothing to do with this.
Well, that's the beauty of it. Anyway, guys, thank you very much. Good stuff. Go ahead, Johnny. One more comment.
I was going to ask. So the insurance market, I don't know anything about the housing insurance market. So this is an open question. Does it have a cross-state impact? The fact that the insurance rates in Florida have gone up substantially because of the, you know, the weather risk and the climate change risk and all that stuff, you know, those pesky hurricanes, does that impact the house insurance cost here in Illinois?
No.
It's state-based.
Directly, but I think ultimately it does, because, you know, if these states are going to pull out of places and just not offer insurance anymore, which is happening in Florida and California, they're going to have to make up their bottom line someplace else where they continue to do business. So,
actually, John, I don't want to disagree. I just want you to know that, like State Farm has State Farm of Florida. If that goes out, that goes out. I mean, they're making them separate companies. But here's something you got to think about. State Farm now has State Farm of Illinois. We are the number two or three, I think we're the third highest claim state out of the 50 states with these hail storms and roof replacements and stuff like that.
Well, that happens all the time in Colorado.
So that's pretty spooky numbers. So that's why our rates are going so high. It is not Florida that's causing it. It's these roofs
claims.
And
yeah.
Stuff like that. And until we get different, and I mean, I'm not saying people aren't justified trying to file. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying a new roof used to be about, I don't know, $8,000 to $12,000 maybe, and now
it's 30.
Yeah, it's
30.
20, 30.
Keep going.
Yeah, so I mean, it can be, well, it depends what kind of roof you have. For the average guy, it's really like around anywhere from 14 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
They can't, because I have people call me and try and finance this, and I tell them, like, look, State, don't give up your 3% rate for this. State Farm is willing to finance. They are willing.
Well, we got a dash, guys, but we'll talk about this a little bit next week, because some of that roof stuff in some areas, Mr. John Lee, they required you to have. You couldn't, when you built in some of these big areas, especially in the southwest, well, I'm just saying, some of the southwest side, these real nice areas, you couldn't have an asphalt roof. It had to be a cedar shake or something like that. Try and replace a cedar shake on a big building, it's like 90.
Those are 100,000 times minimum.
Yeah. Oh. So I mean, that was the zoning when you went in there. We're not talking about the asphalt roof in my mom and dad's place. it was $1,500 to replace.
Right, that not, that yeah. is a zoning law. That's not.
Yeah.
You know, that had nothing. That's with the area you live in. At least there you could possibly move.
Yeah. And leave somebody else a crummy old room. All right, guys. Have a good week, everybody.
Okay.
SP Futures up 7, NASDAQ Futures down 12. Again, big news is gold and natural gas, both to the moon here. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
As leader of all illegal activities in Casablanca, I'm an influential and respected man.